gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky.
Welcome back to another episode of Give Me Some Truth. It's Stan in the studio with the international team, Stan and Syl, as we get ready to talk quarter one market update. We've got Syl, the chartered financial. What is the analyst? Jeez, I don't know. I just had a total. So, analyst is the word I was searching for there, and I should have known that. I've been here for far too long to have a blank brain moment like that. But still, I'll kind of let you lead the way on this podcast as the CFA in the room. sure. But Stan certainly can appeal to your reason along the way as well. But let's break into it right off the bat.
No, absolutely. And what we wanted to do is just have a bit of a discussion to give everyone an update on what we've seen in markets and just give you a bit of a recap of what's been happening. And certainly, I mean, Stan and I talk markets almost every day in the office. And we just wanted to share a little bit of what we've seen and what we've found interesting, during the first quarter of 2021. So that's our theme for today, 2021 recap, 2021 Q1 recap.
And I know that the last time we had this podcast, it was Q3 into Q4. And I guess that'll be my first question to you is, you know, the changes we've seen since we recorded that last one into Q1, the end of Q1 here, 2021, because there's been plenty going on for you to talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot going on. I mean, the first thing I would say about Q1 2021 is, you know, it's been a good quarter, right? So first of all, if you're a client and you're a diversified investor, you probably had a pretty good investment performance over the course of the quarter. So on balance, it's been a good market few months, right? So, but it's looked a little bit different than what we've seen in Q4 and what we've seen also in Q3. I think some of the main things that we've seen really in this quarter were had to do with rates. So obviously we live in a very low rate environment. So bond yields are still very, very low. And that hasn't changed, right? But we've seen a little bit of movement in treasury rates, right? And, you know, it's kind of the first time in a long time that we see an upward move in treasury rates. And it's a very important event for markets. And I think I talked about it in previous podcasts that one of the most important piece of data that you can watch in markets nowadays is the 10-year U.S. Bond yield, because it drives so much of what's going on in the economy and in markets. And we've seen the bond yields go up a little bit, not dramatically, right? But I think the 10-year bond yield is hovering around, I think, 1.6-1.7% nowadays. And so if you hold bonds, you were probably down maybe 3% or so on that investment over the course of the quarter. And that's really been one of the main themes of the quarter and one of the main talking points for investors.
Right. So, I mean, and to put that yield into perspective, or to put it in a different perspective maybe, right, if you've got a yield of 1.7, then that also means that rates have jumped 70%, right? So I mean,
well, when you're still so close a small to number, when you're so close to zero, the percentages look big.
But it does. Yeah, I mean, the rate of change seems dramatic, and then the financial media, of course, will jump on the dramatic and make it seem even more dramatic.
Of course,
yeah. So, you know, I guess caveat about most people had a good quarter, right? So because of rates, the most sensitive stocks got dinged pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. And, we advocate, you know, ultra diversification here at Wachner Condon, but that doesn't change the fact that many people, you know, might have you know, had individual stock portfolios that have done very well over the last 10 years, and they might have an outsized position in, you know, certain stock or a group of stocks that are pretty rate sensitive, or at least reacted adversely to the change. And so I'd say that while most portfolios were up and most ETF-based portfolios were certainly up, not every client was necessarily up, because you know they might have concentrated positions in things that got dinged pretty good. And in fact, I believe during the quarter, at one point in time, the NASDAQ was down well over 10% from its high. In fact, more like 15% from its high. So if you own one of those NASDAQ darlings in concentration, then it probably, we've gotten a little we've gotten a little greedy about our quarterly expectations since the COVID bottom, you know, a little more than a year ago now, right? But right at the end of the first quarter last year. Well, I can't believe it's been a year.
Yeah.
Right. It seems like it's been five, but it's just been a year, right?
Right.
And the returns have been so spectacular, and were predominantly most spectacular in the most rate sensitive stocks, because of course COVID sent interest rates diving, you know, but when the Fed, you know, definitely got even more proactive about lowering rates.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, so that is kind of the second big theme of Q1 2021. And it's been this sector rotation where, you know, for the first time in a long time, technology is not the leading sector in the broad U.S. indices.
Yeah, right? And values led growth for the year now.
Yeah, which is, and again, you know, if you listened and watched CNBC, it's always going to sound more dramatic than it really is, but it is significant, right? It just means that for the first time in a long time, you're seeing technology actually being one of the worst performers in terms of sectors, right? And I think it's actually at the bottom, but still with a positive performance, right? I think if you look at the quarter as a whole, technology still managed to be up about just under 2%. So it's not been like a terrible quarter for technology,
right?
But in relative terms, you're seeing unloved sectors do better, and you're seeing value outperform growth. And it's been a while since we've seen this. And actually, I look at some of the top performing sectors in Q1, and I see energy, financial services, materials. I mean, this is stuff
right.
that people hate.
Right.
Right. And
I hinted at a lot of this at the part of our year-end review, right, about the S&P and where it's been and where it's going. I hinted at this idea that the most crowded trade in the universe is in the technology sector, right? And the predominance of technology in the S&P itself was a little bit of a red flag. And predominantly because if COVID started to abate and some of these other sectors became more attractive, the technology trade was so overcrowded that it wasn't necessarily, you wouldn't necessarily have to see something bad happen in the technology sector for it to take a hit. It would simply be, well, no one can buy any of these other things without selling some of their tech stocks, because right now they're all crowded into tech stocks, right? I mean, it's just the, you know, it's supply and demand. And, you know, to the extent that people's cash is all used up, how are they going to buy ExxonMobil? You know, and the answer is, where they're going to sell their Microsoft, right?
Right.
I mean, what else did they got?
That's one thing I was actually going to ask you, Stan, is you had that piece in our year-end investment guide, and you kind of had the conclusion there about, you know, what's going to happen in 2021. If, as you revisit that, looking back on an hour, things you've seen, at least in terms of your conclusion in that piece, which was, if you haven't read it, on our website, walkingconnor.com, and a really solid look at the S&P, but are the things you look back on that and now seeing firsthand here in 2021?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, without making, you know, bold predictions about, you know, what's going to happen, I mean, it has kind of played out the way that I alluded, you know, so far, right? Now, of course, over the last couple of weeks, you know, it seems like technology's gotten its legs again, so to speak, right? So, and interest rates, you know, the Treasury seems to have, you know, eased even a little bit. Treasury rates seem to have eased a little bit. And so it seems like, you know, a more of a return to that, you know, 2020 market a little bit, right? But maybe a little more breadth, which would be very healthy. But in my mind, there's three different attitudes that that investors can have right now, right? They can have this attitude that COVID's on the rise again. You know, you get news like J&J's vaccine getting halted, and you're like, okay. So there's naturally going to be doubters about a broad-based recovery and return to normal. So there'll be the camp that'll be like, look, you know, we are going to be, you know, we're going to be in pseudo lockdown longer than anyone thinks, right? And if you're of that belief, then this year could just play out a lot like 2021, right? You know, as far as what sectors dominate, right? You would still want those at-home trades in your portfolio, right? And of course, here at Wagner Cuddle, we want you to have everything in your portfolio. Let's preface it by that as well. But okay, so there's a second group, you know, way of thinking, and that is, hey, look, we're back. Okay, let's take the masks off. Let's go out to restaurants. Let's fly to Hawaii. Let's go tour Europe. You know, everything's coming back, and we're going to return to the way it was right before. And in that scenario, I think technology is a little challenged from the competition, people trying to, you know, buy, you know, more leisure and travel stocks, people, you know, maybe thinking in energy, and also, you know, broad-based manufacturing. But like, just look, this is going to be, you know, the big reversal here, and the economy's going to get back to its pre-COVID behaviors, right? And then there's a third train of thought possibly that would be not sort of a compromise between the two, and it is, hey, things are going to get better, and they're going to get, you know, everything's going to be positive, but it's never going to be exactly like it was before, right? So, you know, those people aren't going to be necessarily as attracted with the idea of, saying, buying a lot of commercial real estate, because they don't think that people will return, you know, to their offices. They think, you know what, you know, people aren't going to be entirely comfortable with travel, or maybe they're not going to take cruises because they're going to be worried that, you know, who knows, the next strain of COVID is vaccine resistant, and I don't want to be in the middle of the Caribbean, you know, looking for a port that will welcome us back when people start to get sick. I don't know, you know, I mean, but there could clearly be, you know, this middle ground where technology can still do well, and select other sectors can still do well, because they think that, you know, a lot of things that changed because of COVID are trends that will continue, but it won't be, you know, as debilitating as it tends to be when we're in lockdown mode.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And I think, and I wrote about it actually in the 2021 outlook. I described kind of this crazy world that where, you know, the economy's weak, where we have lockdowns, where we have poor consumer sentiments and all of that. But we are seeing tech valuations soaring, and we are addicted to government stimulus and easy money and cheap, you know, cheap money and low rates, right? So that's the environment that we've been in for a long time. But I don't think it's fundamentally a healthy environment, right?
Right.
The economy shouldn't need a constant supply of stimulus packages, and it shouldn't need, you know, a 10-year treasury under 1% just to function normally. So, right. You know, one important thing to keep in mind is when we talk about rates being higher, and we talk about the 10-year yield being closer to 2%. I mean, in many ways, that's fundamentally a good thing, right? I mean, I think if you were to paint a picture of what of what a healthy economy should look like, if I tried to describe it, it wouldn't be an economy where, you know, the short-term yields are at zero and the 10-year yield is at 1%, right? It would be closer to an economy where the short-term yields are 2.5%, the long-term yields, I don't know, 5, 6%, right? That sounds healthier to me.
Didn't Ben Bernanke want to see inflation? Right?
Well, and that's funny.
Give us some inflation.
They've been trying for a long time and they've seemingly failed. So, I think at the end of the day, it's good to see higher rates. I want to see higher rates, but the question is, how are markets going to navigate that transition to higher rates if it happens, right? Because it's far from a certainty. We could see a reversal of the very recent trends, and you could see the 10-year come back down. And especially, I think, you know, if there's more Fed action, if they continue to expand their balance sheet, I think we could see lower rates going forward. But if we do see kind of the more positive scenario that you're describing with the economies reopening, I think we're going to start seeing higher rates. I think that's good. I think if that happens, we're going to see more sector rotation, and we're going to see more pain in maybe some of what have been the hot sectors of the economy in the last few years. So it's a difficult transition to manage for markets, because I think it's just, we're so addicted to easy money that is just, it's just going to be.
There's nothing unhealthy also about people gravitating or deciding to like again companies that have present earnings, right?
Absolutely.
Rather than just chasing, companies that look like they're going to set the earnings world on fire in 2035, right?
Absolutely.
And one of the reasons why rising interest rates are bad for these, very future, forward-looking earnings companies that don't trade at normal valuations based on anything, that they earn now or will earn this year, but where the analysts start looking at, the sales growth, but then projecting earnings out, 3 or 4 years later, is because the higher the higher prevailing interest rates are, analysts are supposed to use some kind of analytic discipline and financial discipline, mm-hmm. and that means discounting forward earnings, right?
Absolutely.
And what do they use to discount forward earnings? They have to use interest rates to get a discount rate that is rational and in line with the economy. And the higher the discount rate, the less value those future earnings have.
Absolutely. And that's another point that I think was discussed in our outlook is, you can think about stocks in many ways in the same way that you think about bonds in terms of having a duration, right? And stocks have a duration of their own in some ways. It's a bit more abstract than with bonds. But a company that has no current earnings and has only, hypothetical future earnings in the very, very distant future has a very different duration profile than a good old healthy cash flow producing company that actually has current earnings and is net profitable, right? And so as interest rates go up, I think you're naturally seeing a rotation back to the more traditional, higher quality companies that also have stronger cash flow profile. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It actually sounds pretty reasonable when you think about it. But again,
we'd like to find that company that has good valuation, strong earnings now, and even more rosy outlook for future earnings. But, the bottom line is that, that's attractive to everybody. And right now, that stock has been bought and bought and bought. And so its valuation stretched.
Absolutely.
It's just the way it is.
Absolutely. And I think, there's the interest rates. And the reason I keep circling back to interest rates are being such an important data point is because, it's important for markets, right? And I think that there comes a time where, higher bond yields can hurt stocks, right?
They
can hurt the broad market, right? So there's sector rotations implications, of course, but there's also just for the performance of even a broad index, you could very, very well see pressure on stock prices just on the back of higher rates.
Right. So we could, you know, we lived in a world over the last few years that was very kind to stocks and bonds at exactly the same time. Yeah. And that's not like the historical norm.
No, right? Very high stocks, bond correlation.
Yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be negatively correlated, right? So that, you know, if you're afraid, you're selling your stocks and you're buying your bonds. And right. if you're feeling greedy, like, you know, the world's looking great and it's getting better every day, you know, sell your bonds and buy your stocks, right?
Thing as we kind of wrap up this conversation, guys, I want to talk about is factors you're looking at as we roll into quarter two. I know vaccines continue to ramp up, factors like that, but what are you watching in particular? Maybe still you can go first on this as we move toward quarter two out of the doldrums of winter.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a number of things. I mean, I look at inflation risk a lot, and I don't necessarily do it directly by looking at published inflation numbers, but I kind of look at things like commodities prices and the way that different sectors perform to try to, you know, see if there are hints of maybe the beginning of a higher inflation environment, because I think, you know, that obviously has implications for rates and for the equity market that are really, you know, extremely broad and are, you know, we'd need five podcasts to really discuss them. But I think, you know, it's one of the big questions for markets is whether inflation is going to be a risk going forward.
Stan, do you have anything to add on that front as far as factors for Q2?
Yeah, I mean, obviously interest rate, we've been talking this whole time about how critical interest rates are, right? And how important it all is. And one thing that I look at, because obviously our clients are living abroad and they might have a higher concentration of non-US assets, would be the dollar, right? What's the dollar going to do? We started to get hints of the dollar finally, you know, weakening, right? And European and Asian currencies all really strengthening against the dollar. Now the dollar seems to have that slide has abated and the dollar's even shown some strength. So I'm going to be very, very curious to see, you know, how that is going forward. And, you know, interest rates probably play an important role in that, and inflation expectations play a role in that. Another thing, you know, out there in the real world that is influencing this, I think, is the frustration of the rest of the world. The U.S. has had, you know, we get a D minus, and I'm being generous, for the way COVID was handled up to the point where people started to get vaccinated, and now the U.S. has most of the supply, and as a result, we get the highest grade for rollout and getting people vaccinated and feeling safer. And that's a good thing for the U.S. economy. And in Europe, the EU's really struggled with this, right? So they're going to need to address that, and hopefully we can start to share what turns out to be an oversupply of vaccine pretty soon. But it's really, you know, things happen, right? The J&J news this week, you know, halting the availability of that vaccine for now was a big shocker, right? So I am personally interested to see how the world gets the cure, so to speak, right? And tangentially curious to see what effects that plays on the dollar and whether or not this dollar re-strengthening is temporary or if it's something that turns out longer lasting.
And I think before we wrap up, the last thing I want to mention is, because I think the tone of this podcast has been very much you know, about the potential for higher rates and the risk to bond prices and things like that. I want to just you know, emphasize that this doesn't necessarily mean that we are, you know, dumping bonds or no longer using bonds. I'd like to kind of remind listeners that bonds play a really important role in portfolios. And there are no real good substitute for an asset class that actually can do well in even like a deflationary environment or high volatility environment or crisis like environment. And that's always a risk, right? So I think bonds continue to play a very important role for diversification in our clients' portfolios, and we continue to use them for that reason.
Wonderful. Well, Sil, Stan, thank you so much for your time, guys, and your expertise on this subject. This has been another production of Give Me Some Truth. We'll talk to you soon.
Wachter Kahn & Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Wachter Kahn & Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific security. Securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Thanks for listening, and for further information, please visit WachterKahn.com.